Good morning. I'm doing well. And, yeah, the parade will happen, rain or shine. Last year it rained, and
just
I remember walking
just
in that rain.
Yeah, and rain, just a little bit of rain last year.
Right. It was mostly the standing around beforehand, and because we were there with the referendum. Standing around beforehand and looking for people who had umbrellas so I could stand with them and be out of the rain.
Well, it's BYOB, right? Bring your own umbrella for the parade on Tuesday if necessary. But the only thing I'm worried about is when I see thunderstorms, Sue, the lightning,
yeah,
if something like that happens.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's why I'm going to ask Mick coming up in a little bit so we'll get some direction on that and all the websites and Twitter handles and everything else we can follow during that. Or we just, like you said, cross your fingers. Get a little wet beforehand, perhaps. All you need is about 90 minutes, right, to get everybody through
exactly,
the line.
And then it can rain after.
It doesn't need to be nice all day, although we would like that to happen. But the parade, two things to remember. 10 a.m., sirens will light it up. You can't miss the beginning of it. And number two, the 4th of July parade in Bloomington is on the 4th of July.
4th of July.
Not on Saturday, not the closest. First Monday after the second Tuesday after. It's not like Election Day. It's on the 4th of July. So we'll have fun with that, and it's an exciting time to see the community get together. Our own Jim Inman and Keith Klein will be at the reviewing stand. I don't know how many years that is in a row. It's America's birthday, and it's Keith's birthday.
And it's Keith's birthday, yes.
To have a parade and fireworks for him, that's a pretty cool deal on it all. I don't want to say there were fireworks at your meeting on Tuesday night, but very passionate, very community involved, as it should be, because it is the Community School Corporation. And before we get to the presentations and everything else, I don't know if people knew the personnel side of the meeting on Tuesday night. That kind of got lost in the shuffle, but there's a few schools that are looking for a decent amount of administrators moving forward.
Well, yeah, you're right, and assistant principals. But we did do a little bit of we did approval of some of the hiring on Tuesday. We approved Donnie Carver, who's moving from Templeton to the Hoosier Hills
Career
to
Center.
The Hoosier Hills Academy for as assistant director, and he's looking forward to doing something new with vocational ed and tech ed. So he's excited about that. And Christy McBride was approved earlier in the year as the new director out at Hoosier Hills. And Gayla McAdams was approved as a new assistant principal at Bloomington North. Now that leaves one more assistant principal and a principal to hire out there. And Susan Petty was approved as the principal of Clear Creek. She had been the assistant principal. And when Deb Prankert became the director of elementary education in our administration, Susan Petty seemed like the ideal candidate to replace Deb Prankert over there at Clear Creek. But we've still got, now we've opened up a Templeton principalship. So we do have some
musical chairs, and when the music stops, everybody better have a seat or you're out.
Right. Well, I hope all the seats will be taken, and I have no doubt that they will. You know, as soon as resignations or retirements or changes, moves are announced, those positions are posted, and they're usually posted just with available until filled. So if people are interested, they really need to get on their applications to the school corporation and move fairly quickly.
And those jobs don't stay on that board for very long, do they?
I really don't think so. And I know when the superintendent was hiring the assistant superintendents, we had tons of applications that had to be whittled down. So I think people, from what we hear, people want to teach here. I mean, this is a great community, a community that approved a referendum for the second time around. And people want to teach and be administrators here because they know that there's a lot of support for education here.
Sue Wanzer is our guest this morning. She checks in from the MCCSE school board and Tuesday night school board meeting. Also had a focus on the lunch policy, and we had talked about that before. We had talked about that with the superintendent Tuesday morning, Dr. Judy DeMuth, Amanda Nicky from Mother Hubbard's Cupboard the week before that on Friday or Thursday. I can't remember all the days run together. But obviously it was an issue that was brought to the forefront because of federal regulations by July 1st. School districts needed to have on paper what their lunch program was going to be for paying off debt because the schools can't carry any debt with the federal government. So this brought the issue to the forefront, Sue, and then some people in our community pointed out that maybe that's not the way or best way we could handle children not having money in their account, children not getting certain lunch options, food being thrown, all that together seemed to stir and seemed to bring the community out in numbers on Tuesday night.
Right, you're right. And Glasswell, we had, I think the newspaper, I didn't time it, the newspaper said it was about an hour of comments speaking in opposition to our policy. We had the boardroom filled, the hallway filled, out in the lobby where we have a monitor. That was filled. Extra chairs were put there. And extra chairs were put down in the basement where we have like a little lounge area and also a TV monitor down there. And that was packed. So, we had a lot more people than people who spoke. They wanted to see what was happening. Certainly, we had a lot of professionals who work in trying to solve food insecurity, trying to provide food to people. And everybody asked us to just change the policy and take the kid out of the equation. If families owe money, fine, deal with them. But don't put the kid in there, which I think people have acknowledged. After three charges, the meals were exchanged. The hot meal was exchanged for an alternate meal to kind of put pressure on families to pay. Now, whether families could pay or not, we don't know the answer to that. But that's really the motivation for that kind of a policy. And a lot of school corporations, not just us, but a lot of places all over the country have that kind of a policy, which is why this has become now a national issue, I think, after New Mexico passed a law that said schools couldn't do that.
Who is requiring the debt? If you carry the debt forward, because we have to follow the money, we talk every right. Thursday on this program about the funding, the lack of funding that happens in schools. So right. People will say, well, it's only $10,000, $11,000 on average annually. Well, you don't actually have a pot of gold behind the administrative building that you can tap into when that happens.
Right, and we have had, that was one of the questions I asked Mr. Kenny, John Kenny, who is our new business manager. I asked him every other year, where do we get the money to pay that debt? And it does come from the general fund. We do scrape together some money because, you know, that is our debt. I mean, it's not like we necessarily owe somebody else money. We owe ourselves money, so that becomes kind of difficult to do. But there is a possibility that debt could increase if we change our policy and we allow every kid to have a meal every time. And what we would like to rely on donations, because the one thing we did hear is that the administration changed the way lunches are charged. A kid goes in line, gives their, you know, picks their food, gets to the cashier, gives their number, and it's plugged in, and you see how much money is in the kid's account. Or the debit, the way that they've worked with the software company now, if the kid has a debt in their account, there's a button to push for house account, and that will charge that meal to the house account, which essentially will come from the donations that people are sending to the foundation. So there'll be a way, until the donations run out, to cover the debts for the kids. But, you know, once again, we heard from people that they don't want to donate if we're going to keep a policy that punishes kids. So we'll have to see what happens.
Now, what would the punishment be in this new sense?
There wouldn't be a punishment, like holding the kid responsible.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. So it sounds like that
right.
problem is solved?
No, I think what we heard Tuesday were a lot of different ideas and some national resources. And I think what I heard from the superintendent was a commitment maybe to have our social workers or others work more closely with families to get payments when they owe, to work more closely with people who may not realize they qualify for free or reduced lunch. Some people, excuse me, don't want to apply for free and reduced lunch for whatever reason. I would think then that if those people go in debt, well, then they're going to have the alternate meal because they've made a choice not to be able to pay. I really do not know how many people might qualify who don't apply. That's just not something we would know. But here's my big concern, Glasses. We honestly kind of might not really know how many kids would have the alternate lunch because we have so many staff members and cafeteria folks who are paying the meal when it exceeds three meals in debt. And I certainly don't want our teachers or our cafeteria staff to ever have to feel like they have to pay to avoid taking a meal away from a kid. It's not, our cafeteria workers just do not make enough money. And we've heard from teachers who keep money in a safe place in their classroom, and when they know a kid is in debt, they pay for them. So, you know, we do have to find a better way.
So it's it's a socioeoeconomic problem, is what you're telling me.
Right, yeah, it sure is, right. So, and I do believe we've had people say, hey, I agreed to pay the referendum taxes. I already pay state taxes and property taxes for schools. Don't ask me to donate, but can you find some money in your tax base to cover this? So I think all of those are options that the superintendent and our business office is going to be exploring.
Shouldn't you use a part of all of it?
Yes, I would say so. We can use payments from parents, work harder to get those payments from parents. We can use donations, and then what isn't covered, we could possibly cover with our general fund or our referendum fund.
And again, this isn't... The kids aren't responsible for this. We know that...
No, they're not. Right.
They don't... It's not their purview. They don't handle that. But we know not having... Yeah, here's what I learned. The system has to change. I don't think that's the right thing to do. You can justify it with the throwing away of food and saving... And all, I don't know how the exact economics work out of that. That doesn't sound like the proper process moving forward. But I also understand that you can't run up debt infinitely. It doesn't work that way. So somewhere in the middle has to be a happy medium at least. Now, the policy that has to be turned in by July 1st to the federal government, Sue, we see in today's paper that Dr. DeMuth is going to take in public comment, review it, and doctor change around the lunch policy for the July 25th board meeting. How does that work? I'm a little confused. If you have to submit one to the federal government and then we're going to change it, how does that balance out? Or am I lost here?
We already
straighten me out, Sue. I'm outside the yellow lines. Get me back in between the yellow lines here.
Okay. We have the policy that we approved in May. So we have a policy in place. And basically, the only thing that the federal government is asking is it says somewhere in your food policy, because we already had a food policy, it said somewhere in your food policy indicate how you will cover debt that does not use federal money. As far as I know, we weren't using any federal money ever to cover our debt. So that's what was added to the policy. Now, that policy was approved, so that policy can be turned in. If we amend the policy with what Superintendent DeMuth has heard from the public, that part will stay the same, the how we pay back our debt. And how we pay back our debt is through donations and our general fund money. So you're not in debt.
That's the compliance you need to be in with the federal government.
Right. Yes, we'll comply with the federal government and tell them that we won't use their money. And we'll tell them how we will do it. But also, it sounds like some of our food professionals in town, some city staff would like to help the school corporation, and that's wonderful. People who know the bottom line know how to work with this. That's great that people will be helping us with this policy.
And the policy moving forward is, what do we hope to accomplish the next time this is presented, Sue? Tweaks, turnarounds, slight improvements. Can we make it here in just a month? Can we solve this? I guess that's the pipe dream where we would come back and say, we found a way to do this and everybody's going to be happy. That's not going to be the case.
I think, because the policy is like a two-page policy, because it covers everything, how our food service operates, every piece of that. So the part of non-payment is one small part of the policy. So at least in my mind, we can tweak it, amend it. We can take out the part that says after three charges, an alternate meal is offered. we can just take that out, but then spell out maybe what we want to do, that it's a policy of the school corporation to make every effort to work with families to pay the debt. If for some reason we want to use collections agencies to collect debt, that's what we do with textbooks. You know, when somebody doesn't pay for their textbook rental, we don't take the textbooks away.
No free lunch, no free textbooks, no free this, no free that.
We send the people who are chronic non-payers, who we believe should be able to pay us, we send to collections. So I don't know that that's a desired outcome for anyone, but that is one outcome. And that's we can just take out the policy about the alternate meals and talk about how we will collect the unpaid money, whether it's working with families, using donations, or supplementing with our general fund money.
Sue Wanzer is our guest this morning. She sits on the MCCSC school board and joins us every Thursday to talk local education issues. Big 4th of July plans?
I think I'm going to walk in the 4th of July parade.
Don't you do that every year?
Yes.
Well, that's good.
Yes, I do. Yes, I'm going to march for some candidates who are running, so I'm going to walk with them.
Excellent.
And have a good time.
And don't forget.
It'll be my weekly exercise.
That's good.
Maybe my annual exercise.
Don't forget your umbrella this year.
Oh, I know. I should have been smarter last year, but luckily Judy DeMuth had an umbrella, and I just kind of followed her wherever she went last year.
Exactly right. BYOB, bring your own umbrella.
Yep.
And have a fantastic weekend. Have a fantastic 4th. And we will talk to you next Thursday to see what else is happening in the.
Okie dokie.
And you know what? Next Thursday is going to be. 1 month till school starts, about in that general area. A lot of people think 4th of July is a big hit of the summer. That's a signal that the summer is over.
I know. It's supposed to be the sign like of the middle of the summer.
When's that calendar committee meet, Sue? We got to get that calendar shifted around again.
Okay. Let's get on that one right
pour
now.
Pour some gas on another fire. We appreciate your time and insight. Thank you for the wrap-up of what's going on and bringing light to the policy and how that works and how it could possibly work moving forward. Great 4th of July. We'll see you next Thursday.
Thanks, guys. Bye-bye.